For those who are my age or older, the name Rhoda probably calls to mind a sitcom character from the 70s. Rhoda Morgenstern first appeared as the best friend of Mary Richards in the Mary Tyler Moore Show, where she was on for four seasons, then was spun off onto her own series after that, that lasted another five seasons. In 1974, Rhoda's Wedding was, at that time, the second most watched show in TV history. In 2006, Entertainment Weekly named Rhoda the 23rd most significant sidekick, described her as a neurotic Bronx broad, declared that Rhoda was the sass to Mary's spunk, the headscarf to Mary's beret. Rhoda could almost always be counted on to bring a laugh with her brash New York attitude that stood in sharp contrast to Mary's Minnesota nice. Now, the Rhoda that appears in our reading for this morning is probably a lot less known, especially among Americans over the last century or half century or so. Actually, when I did a Google search for Rhoda, the biblical character didn't show up until the second page, almost at the very bottom, and everything up until then was pretty much about the sitcom character. But Rhoda, who appears in this story, brings her own sort of bit of a comic sense to this tale and to the book of Acts in general. Now, admittedly, this is a chapter that doesn't start out very funny at all. I mean, it begins by proclaiming the execution of James, the brother of John. He's the first one of Jesus' 12 disciples to be executed by the authorities. But much of the rest of the chapter is actually pretty humorous. In fact, this story of Peter's miraculous release from prison has a lot of parallels to the story of Jesus' resurrection, which, as we note every year on Holy Humor Sunday, was the greatest practical joke that God ever played. And to begin with, in noting these parallels, we see that both Jesus and Peter appear before Herod. Now, actually, it's not the same Herod. The Herod we read about in Acts is the nephew of the Herod that we read about in the Gospel of Luke, who when Jesus appears before him in his trial. He's also the grandson then of the Herod who is the king when Jesus is born, and Matthew tells us about how that Herod tried to kill him at that time. One of the differences among these Herods, though, is that the one we read about here in Acts seems more concerned with what the people actually think of him than a lot of his predecessors. So you'll see that it reports when he has James executed that it pleased the Jews. Now, I've said this before, but again, in this era when anti-Semitism is seemingly on the rise, it bears repeating that when you read about the Jews in the New Testament, oftentimes this is shorthand for the religious authorities. It's not talking about all of the Jews, and in fact, we need to remind ourselves that pretty much everybody in the church at this time, almost everybody, is also Jewish. And so when Herod sees that the Jewish leaders, the religious authorities, are pleased by what has happened, then he goes on to arrest Peter also. And he sets up this collaboration then between the civil and the religious authorities, much like what we see happens when Jesus is also put on trial. Another important parallel then between the story of Jesus and the story of Peter is that in both places this arrest takes place during the festival of Passover. Now, of course, Passover is a feast at a time when faithful Jews would recall the great acts of God in leading their ancestors out of slavery. And so Peter's arrested. He's put in prison. He's put under heavy guard to make sure that he doesn't escape. And it's never quite explicit in this passage, but it's pretty clear from the subtext that Herod's intent is to have Peter put to death as well. just as James had been, just as Jesus had been. But then on the night before, the night before Herod plans to bring Peter's case forward, which is sort of a subtle way of saying plans to have Peter executed, this miracle happens. And again, we see several parallels here between Jesus' resurrection and this event. Both cases, these events are orchestrated, they're performed by God. In both cases, there are angels involved. Here in Acts, this angel comes and looses Peter's chains and gives him directions on getting dressed and leads him out, and the guards don't see him, much as the guards at the tomb who are guarding Jesus' tomb didn't see him either. And then just like that stone on Jesus' tomb is somehow miraculously rolled away, so also the prison doors simply swing open as Peter approaches them. And it's all so amazing, so incredible, that Peter thinks he's having a dream. This doesn't seem real. It's not until he's out in the street and the angel finally disappears that Peter realizes that this is really happening to him. The text says that Peter came to his senses and remarked, "No, I'm certain the Lord sent the angel and rescued me from Herod and from everything the Jewish people expected." And then he goes to the house of Mary, the mother of John Mark. And Luke tells us that there were many believers gathered there in prayer. A little earlier in the same text, we read that the church offered earnest prayer to God for Peter. So we presume that's what they're praying about now when they're gathered also at Mary's house. And Peter shows up and he knocks on the door. And apparently Mary has some wealth to her, because she has this female servant, or as many commentators or some translators put it, a slave that goes to answer the door. And here's where Rhoda comes in. And when Rhoda enters the scene is when the story gets especially humorous. I mean, imagine this is a story that was told and retold over the years by people who had been there that night, reminiscing about that time. Remember when we were all gathered there and Rhoda answered the door and she told us that Peter was there? And they'd all have this good laugh, because the slave girl is so overjoyed at hearing Peter's voice that she doesn't bother to open the gate. She can't think of anything to do but to run and tell everybody else, "Hey, Peter's at the gate." And they all look at her and say, "You have lost your mind." Again, it's a similar reaction to what we see following the resurrection. The male disciples don't believe the report of the women who find the empty tomb. Luke tells us their words struck the apostles as nonsense, and they didn't believe the women. And just like those first disciples were locked behind closed doors after Jesus' crucifixion, so also the disciples in Peter's time are behind locked doors. And they're fearful, for good reason. I mean, James has just been executed, and Peter probably is going to be shortly after sunrise as well. But as they're praying for delivery from that, they fail to recognize that the answer to their prayers is standing right outside the door. And they refuse to listen to Rhoda, no matter how much she insists that what she's saying is true. And meanwhile, there's Peter, still stuck outside, still knocking at the door, cognizant of the fact that he's not that far away from the cell that he just escaped from, and pretty soon there's going to be some soldiers looking for him when they discover that cell is empty, and he's knocking and trying to get in, and eventually the whole group goes to see what's actually happening, and they find Peter at the gate, and they are astounded. Rhoda was right, just like the women were right about the resurrection. The impossible has happened. And now they're finally ready to believe it. Now, when they see and experience for themselves, just the same way that the Apostle Thomas did, just like all of the disciples who didn't believe the stories of the women, now they see for themselves and they're ready to celebrate. In fact, they are so ready to celebrate that Peter has to calm them down. He doesn't want too much commotion, drawing attention. And then finally, like Jesus, Peter doesn't stick around very long after this miraculous event. He goes on to another place. We don't know where he goes at this point. We're not told. But before he goes, he makes sure to tell everybody there about this miraculous event that has occurred to them. And just like there was an angel at Jesus' tomb telling the women to go tell Peter himself and the other disciples, Peter tells the people gathered there to go and tell James, the brother of Jesus, and the other believers. And they must have done that because it got written down and we're able to read about it almost 2,000 years later. This whole thing is almost like a strange sitcom plot. I mean, there's mistaken identity, there's miscommunication. The prisoner is freed, but he thinks he's dreaming. The esteemed guest almost is not admitted to the gathering that is being held in his honor. The believers refuse to believe that their prayers have been answered. The faith community celebrating the miraculous release of their ancestors from bondage years ago are unable to accept that one of their own has now been wondrously freed right among them. And the only one who immediately understands this great miracle that has occurred is this slave girl, Rhoda. But the story of Rhoda is not just a bit of sort of comic relief in the middle of this book about a lot of persecution and hardship. There's something deeper here, and frankly, I sympathize with Rhoda in all of this. And it can be difficult to convince a group of skeptics that you're telling the truth. No, really, Peter, the one who's been shackled, who has had guards of soldiers around him 24 hours a day. Peter is standing there at the gate and he's knocking. You're right. It's not uncommon to have that same sort of skeptical response in proclamations we might make today, truths we proclaim. No, Jesus rose from the dead. He established this kingdom and asks us to give our full allegiance to him. Yeah, sure he did. No, really, nonviolent love is more powerful than military force. Yeah, tell me another one. No, our consumption of goods is changing the climate. It's ruining the earth. Oh, please. Yeah, time and again, we get those principles of peace and compassion and hospitality, all those concepts for which Jesus lived and ultimately died and rose again, they're dismissed by our cynical culture as being unrealistic or impractical or woke. So perhaps I have a bit of a sense of what it was like for Rhoda to be doubted, to be told that she was out of her mind for what she thought she heard. Again, as is often the case in the sitcoms, though, there's a very simple remedy, some actions that she could have taken to get rid of all the miscommunication and mistaken identity. She could have opened the gate. I mean, instead of just keeping it closed and saying, hey, Peter's out there, she could have brought him in and said, look, here's Peter. Could have saved a whole lot of trouble for everybody. And the same is true for us today. I mean, it's one thing to say God cares for the poor. It's something else entirely to actually show God's care for those who are in poverty. It's one thing to say Jesus welcomes immigrants. It's something else to show Christ's hospitality towards outsiders. It's one thing to say the Holy Spirit is a spirit of peace. It's something else to show how that spirit is at work in the midst of violence and oppression. For like Rhoda, we need to be willing not just to tell, but to show and tell. Now, of course, for many of us, it's actually the second part of that that's a little bit more difficult. And we're fine with quietly doing good deeds, of being hospitable, trying to live simply, donating to good causes, talking with like-minded people about what we think needs to happen. And so we're fine showing and living out our commitment, at least within certain circles, but it's that telling part that sometimes trips us up. I mean, we know the response that Rhoda got. You're out of your mind. We don't want to face that sort of skepticism, those accusations. So we stay quiet. We don't want to rock the boat. We don't want to be thought of as weird because we believe there are better ways to resolve conflict than weapons and war. We don't want to be labeled fanatics because we believe that Jesus, yeah, really wants us to love our neighbors, including our gay neighbors and our Muslim neighbors and our undocumented neighbors and all of our other neighbors. So we're happy to show our beliefs in our quiet daily lives with random acts of kindness, with prayers for a better world, with donations to worthy causes, and all of that is great. That's all stuff we need to continue to do, but there's also comes a time when we need to be willing to tell. At a time when the public face of Christianity is far too often one that justifies genocide, that condemns LGBTQ people, that declares the U.S. as a specially favored nation and supports moves towards greater authoritarianism, now it is as important as ever to be explicit that we reject all of those options, and that we reject them specifically because of our Christian faith. And so I condemn the wars of the U.S. and of Israel and the Middle East. I condemn the violence of Hezbollah and Hamas because of my faith in Jesus, the Prince of Peace. I embrace my LGBTQ siblings. I fellowship with my Muslim friends because I believe the Holy Spirit welcomes and embraces all of us with radical acceptance. I work to reduce my carbon footprint. I advocate for protecting our planet because of my conviction that God has created all things and entrusted us to be stewards of that creation. These are the sorts of things that I need to learn to be more explicit about. Things that I need to show and tell, just as Rhoda ultimately did. Our story this morning is a story of liberation. It's obvious God intervenes to liberate Peter from prison, where he is sent for his because he has been showing and telling about Jesus. What's not quite as obvious, maybe, is that it is also a story of liberation for a church that has been fearfully meeting behind locked gates. A church that very nearly fails to open those gates to welcome back their leader who has faced almost certain death. And for many of us, it is this latter, less obvious sort of liberation that we're in need of. The liberation that we need is to be freed from the cells that we have constructed for ourselves, the chambers of self-doubt and timidity, the cubicles of concern for what others might think or say about us, the compartments of worry that we'll be laughed at or thought out of our minds the way Rhoda was. Yeah, Rhoda's story is kind of an amusing one, but it is one that has a lot more depth than your typical sitcom plot. For ultimately, if God could send an angel into this heavily guarded prison, if God could empower could overpower an entire squadron of soldiers, if God could undo the chains and to open gates without keys, if God could use Rhoda to open the doors of that church to experience Peter's miraculous liberation, well, then surely God can release us also from whatever shackles we may have put on ourselves. Surely God can open the doors of the jails of our own making. Surely God can lead us beyond the barriers that we have constructed so that we too, can show and tell of the liberating grace of God.